This is Listening, a music-minded podcast for the Dallas Morning News. I'm your host, Hunter Hawk. Before we get to today's slate, you may be wondering about that hypnotic music you're hearing behind me. It's the sound of Sudie Abernathy, a young local singer-songwriter known in Dallas by her first name only. I'll tell you a bit more about Sudie at the end of the show, but there's quite a bit to get to before that. Today's theme, rediscovery. Have you ever listened to music that you haven't heard in a long time and found that you felt differently about it than you once did? Did you finally get the lyrics that you'd mindlessly shouted as a teen? Did perspective make the music better? Or did you find out that what you were hearing didn't quite hold up in the now? Our segments all hit on rediscovery in one way or another. First up, local radio DJ Jeannie Mascoro talks about 5 songs she revisits whenever she needs to beat the oppressive summer heat. Then, writer Dawn Burks shares her concert review of a recent mini-festival headlined by throwback R&B artist Keith Sweat. For our featured interview, Dallas singer-songwriter Salim Nirala talks about finding unlikely musical inspiration from the West Texas town where he grew up. And finally, I talk about my ever-evolving feelings concerning Janet Jackson. They go pretty deep. So let's get started, shall we? As teased, today's top 5 comes from Jeannie Mascoro, the music guru and DJ who guides the listeners of KXT 91.7 through a wide range of old and new music every weekday morning. With the summer heat reaching the hundreds and in turn becoming unbearable, we asked Jeannie to talk about 5 favorite songs that help her cool down at any given time. Here's what she had to say. I don't understand, but her problem is I think she's just a fish. And now you get it bad, you don't deserve this, and I won't pour it up. One of my favorite songs of the summer so far comes from this 19-year-old singer-songwriter from the north of Ireland who goes by the name of Soak. Now, the song is called Sea Creatures. It's on her debut called Before We Forgot How to Dream, and it's already one of my favorite albums of 2015. Now, the song Sea Creatures kind of acts like AC for the soul. It just kind of takes you there. The instrumentation on it is just out of this world, and she wrote the song when she was just 14, but lyrically, it's pretty astounding. And also, there's a little touch of that Kim Carnes song More Love at Work here. Maybe I'm aging myself, but there you go. Okay, this next song is Faint Outlines from The Avenir. It's everywhere I look, from Las Vegas to right here, under your dresser, right by your ear. It's creeping in sweetly, it's definitely here. There's nothing more deadly than a slow-going fear. Life was full and fruitful and you could take a real bite. A little bit of background on The Avenir. He's the French house producer Tristan Cassara, and this song is actually a remix of a Phoebe Kildare song. Now, the original is super bare bones and kind of stark, but The Avenir takes the song, injects this sexy little hook into it, kind of makes you want to lower the lights and let go, if you know what I mean, right?
Right.
So it's one of those songs that lowers my emotional temperature almost instantaneously. I can be a screaming, raging wreck. And once the song starts up, all is right with the world once again. Hallelujah. Song number 3, Unknown Mortal Orchestra, Swim and Sleep Like a Shark. And there's something about this song in particular that keeps me coming back time and time again. I don't know if it's the simplicity and the sweetness of the song or that kind of sexy, understated bass line in it, but it's pretty much planted itself in my head for all eternity. I'm hearing some kind of 70s FM vibe to it, like The Raspberries is informing the song somehow. Maybe I'm overthinking it. But if someone were to serenade me with this song, I'd be totally sold. Song number 4, Captain Easy Chord from Stereolab. Let me walk my sleep,
this song. This song is like taking a 5 minute and 25 second mental vacation every single time. Even with all that existential angst going on in the lyrics, it could go on for another 5 minutes and 25 seconds. I wouldn't mind one bit. So every time I hear this song, I think of pebbled beaches in France and the smell of Bain de Soleil in the morning. Good stuff. Song number 5, Draw Your Brakes from Scotty. Have to say that The Harder They Come would have to be one of my favorite soundtracks, one of my favorite albums of all time, and this song, Draw Your Brakes from Scotty, just kind of reminds me of a big comfy pillow that you just kind of sink back into and you think of ocean breezes and palm trees, and it's kind of, you know, maybe a little bit of a cliche, but it's very comforting, and sometimes I use this song to remind myself to draw my own brakes and to retrain my brain when I need it, which is often. So it's perfect for simmering me right down. Works every time.
Again, that was the great Jeannie Mascoro, morning host for KXT 91.7 FM, Dallas's publicly funded NPR-affiliated music station. If you want to help keep the music playing on KXT, you should consider donating to it. Visit kxt.org for more info. And while we're on the subject of terrestrial radio, you might also look into KNON 89.3 FM, another music station that depends on its listeners' donations. Visit knon.org to find out more about that station's diverse lineup. On to our next segment. We've got an audio concert review from Dallas Morning News writer and editor Don Burks. Earlier this month, Don joined the dancing and singing masses at Verizon Theater to take in the R&B greatness of Keith Sweat, along with a couple of other throwback acts that you probably remember well if you're old enough. Don discovered at this concert that the 90s are indeed alive and kicking. Here's more from the writer herself.
I said, somebody gonna get ready
Sweat turned a slam dunk into a layup on Saturday night at Verizon Theater. Don't get me wrong, he still scored. He just changed his approach. What's usually a sly seduction turned into a full frontal assault. There were bold proclamations such as, somebody's gonna get pregnant tonight. And there was more than a bit of sleight of hand. An admittedly tired Sweat played 20-plus-year-old music videos to some of his more fan-friendly hits, directing eyes there while he rested a bit on stage. It was a stylish show, complete with a stocked bar, unnecessary hype man, a couch, and a love seat all on the stage. Still, there was just enough substance. Along with rote renditions of hits such as Don't Stop the Love, he performed a couple he helped write for others. Just Got Paid was an energetic surprise. Singer Johnny Kemp died just this year. Freak Me, a hit for one-time opening act Silk, was a highlight. That's Sweat's legacy. He can write a mean right hook, knows his way around a lyric, and knows how to surround himself with talent. That was cut close on the video for Twisted, and cut close singer Athena Cage on Nobody, and his most enduring song, Make It Last Forever, was lifted by Jackie McGee. And the material from LSG is a hit in more ways than one. Gerald Levert, Sweat, and Johnny Gill joined forces in the late 90s to form the supergroup, much to the delight of seemingly every female in the Western Hemisphere, including this one. Sweat performed those songs with the power and clarity missing from his solo output, which sounds a little dated. A blatant Door Number One brought the noise, and a sensual and video-aided My Body brought the funk, if you read what I'm saying.
If I lay you down.
LSG brought out the best in Sweat's fair vocals. No choice, really, when you're literally in the middle of two of the genre's biggest voices. But it's not really about that, is it? This was the R&B music fest. Didn't you see that sign on the way in? That denotes and connotes a celebration of the genre. Even in between sets, music from the 1990s had the audience buzzing and singing along. One can blame the openers here. SWV and Belle Biv DeVoe had an unintentional sing-along off. What BBD had in quantity, SWV made up for in intensity. The trio, who was resplendent in white and smart and comfortable wedge-heeled shoes, warmed up with debut single Right Here. Then, Taj George, Coco Clemons, and Lili Lyons made folks, okay, me, do the WAP with I'm So Into You. Their voices have a depth and tone that they didn't have early in their career. Perhaps it's because of the added confidence of having a hit reality TV show, SWV Reunited. They threw the first punch of the sing-along off, and it was the hardest. When the sisters with voices sang weak, the entire place, staff included, matched them note for note. Trying not to be outdone, always, BBD said up front that they wanted to turn the building into a big old party. After all, they're in the midst of celebrating the 25th anniversary of Poison. So they kicked off with sing-along number one, Do Me Baby. This is why beats are so important, children. No one ever takes them to task for backstage, underage, adolescent, etc. It didn't matter the sing-along number two. I thought it was me turned to mush halfway through. Ronnie DeVoe was having the time of his life, dancing with abandon and precision, if such a thing is possible. The term might be a little new, but turning up isn't. DeVoe might still be dancing, Sweat still smiling, and SWV might still be hitting some high notes at this very moment. Every artist in the 90s knew how to have fun. The proof is that they still are.
Spider-Man and freezing, full effect.
You ready, Ron?
I'm ready.
You ready, Div?
I'm ready, Slick, are you?
Oh, yeah. Take it down.
Girl, I must warn you.
Thanks again to Dawn Burks for that scene setter. Next time Belle Biv DeVoe comes to town, I might have to go on my own magical history tour. On that note, it's time for our featured interview. Salim Nirala has been making his own records and producing others, including alt-country heroes The Old 97s, at his East Dallas studio for more than a decade. On August 7th, Salim will release his sixth solo album, Skeleton Closet. As the artist told me during a recent visit to the Dallas Morning News, his new music is a bit of a departure from the tout, intricately produced records of his past. This time around, Salim found some inspiration from a place he hadn't thought about in a long time, El Paso, Texas, the town where he grew up. Our conversation covers the West Texas aesthetic, some other songwriting inspirations from the new album, and the singer's new way of performing live. Hint, there's a boombox involved. We join the interview with Salim Nirala in progress.
Yeah, whatever brings you lovesick zombie on the run. Looking for a heart to the sentence that you seek will come as no relief till you set your demons free. So in your Sunday best, your viewing was a mess. When you moved your mouth to speak, a dead man's walk, a dead man's talk, a dead man's stare.
So El Paso is not small technically, but it's still, I feel like I might as well have come from a small town, because ultimately what it did represent is there was no opportunity there. I knew from a pretty young age that I wanted to be in music. I wanted to play music. I wanted to produce music. In fact, my mother recently found a manifesto that I made for myself when I was 17 or 18, and it was pretty amazing because at the top of the list it was be a record producer, and second was but continue to play my own music. And so I'd already had
exactly what you're doing.
Yeah, weird, but so I'd already had a plan, I guess, but I knew El Paso wasn't going to figure into it. So as much as I, you know, where we're raised is, it's just in our blood, for lack of a better, you know, it's always in there because it's your childhood, and you can't, it doesn't matter how far away you go or how much you tell yourself you hated where you were raised, or, you know, for whatever reasons, it's always in there. And this was pre-internet days. This was back in when there were dinosaurs and, you know, were roaming the earth. And so we had to look for music in other ways, like Saturday Night Live. You know, I found this magazine from New York called Trouser Press that I would order and then just religiously read and look for, you know, things that look like I'd be interested in them. And so a band that we found when I was in eighth grade, this kid from California, Brad Austin, brought this record into a band, into a middle school band. It was by The Clash. And we were just really interested in the photography and the way, you know, we hadn't seen a record that looked like that. And I'll never forget my brother and I one afternoon, one hot El Paso afternoon, like you could be playing some sort of Ennio Morricone spaghetti western music as these two kids marched down to Brad Austin's house to borrow The Clash's first record, and then we went straight back to my bedroom and put it on, and we're sort of confused at first. We'd never heard anything like it, but we liked it, and then we played it again right after the first play, and we knew we were hooked. So I'm talking about The Clash because I don't think that there's ever been any traces of that band in my music until now, until this record. And it's actually not their first record that is in this record. It's later Clash, where they got weird.
Right, and I think you refer to jagged sonic textures in some of your emails to me about the music, and yeah. You weren't as tight this time. You didn't try to stick to a formula as much, or you didn't try to stick to a rhythm or you let it go with the recording is basically what you're saying.
Yeah, for sure. Like if we go back to my second record, Snowing in My Heart, I sort of look at that like it was a very well manicured. It was sort of like Cary Grant with a perfectly, you know, coiffed hairdo or something, you know, like it had many layers, but it was, everything was like very ordered. Mm-hmm. And this record is not that. This is Cary Grant in a wind tunnel.
Yeah, and I think you've achieved something with this one, in that someone can listen to it and very much kind of go to a place in their head. That's why I can kind of associate it with El Paso and West Texas, even that's cool. Not what you heard when you were there, but it's sort of the aesthetic and the mood that you're in when you're in those places. It's got breadth, it's got scope to the sound. Daniel Lanois-esque approach to it.
I think what you're talking about, what I'm hearing maybe, is it's got more wide open vistas. And, you know, I don't know anybody listening in Dallas right now, if you're looking at some sort of wide open vista, doubtful. The thing that, really hits me when I get out there is, it's almost like, oh, I can breathe again, you know? Like, I can see all of, you know, it's space and the sky. The sky is so big and everything just feels, you know, in the city, everything feels like it's just beating down over us, you know?
Do you ever visit there and write there, or is it more out of memory?
That ties into, you know, if we're going back to the El Paso thing, you know, for me, I just ran away from El Paso and told myself how much I hated it and how oppressive it was. And so I actually hadn't revisited El Paso or even performed in El Paso until last year. It had been about 15 years.
Wow.
And what took me back was there's a track on Skeleton Closet called To the Desert. And I had built it from the opposite way that I usually approach songs, which is usually it's me with an acoustic guitar and an idea and a lyric, and I write the song that way. But on this record, I wanted to create kind of almost soundscapes, like more of a painting with sound. And I built this track, To the Desert, with the music first. And then I wrote a lyric and sang, something. And I thought, well, this is just so kind of sounds like me. And I want to really push further out of the box. And I found this poem by Benjamin Alir Sayens, and he's a poet from El Paso, and I loved it. It was perfect for what I wanted the song to convey. So last year I went and played in Santa Fe and Albuquerque and did this short little run, and I decided that it would be great to go to El Paso and meet Benjamin, and I did, and it was great.
And hearing you read that, the section of that poem at the beginning, it's very different from hearing you sing.
Yeah.
It's a very stoic approach. It's almost like you're opening a Tarantino movie or something.
Yeah.
You also got an interesting Terlingua's an interesting song. You told me the story about that. You were in that town where an influenza epidemic had broken out in, I guess, 1919, 1920.
Yeah.
And you were standing over some graves. But it ended up being a very upbeat, sort of positive thinking kind of song.
Yeah.
Tell me about how that came about.
Yeah, I was wrestling with this song, Are We Gonna Live Tonight? The chorus, you know, like, which, when I was writing it, I was a little uncomfortable with it. Like, it felt like, you know, sometimes I shy away from songs that feel like anthems. You know,
right?
Maybe a
You're
lot.
You're very much a realist.
Yeah, you know, I didn't want it to be ham-fisted, and but then I ended up in Terlingua, which is a pretty incredible place, and it was wiped out. It was a mining town wiped out, and I think in 1918 by the epidemic. And I've never enjoyed cemeteries, and I expect most of our listeners don't either. You know, they're it's rough, but this one. Just is incredible. It's there's this panoramic sort of vista that you would only get in the Southwest, and I was kind of gripped or overwhelmed with this feeling of how glad I am and how great that I'm here and how great it is to be alive, and I wanted to try to put that in the song. You know, I don't think that there's a song that I could fully voice my gratefulness, but you know, that's my attempt. The night is begging for the taking, let the lover make and steal the show. I'm gonna take it all and learn to fall before I let go. Are we gonna live? Tell me, are we gonna live tonight? Are we gonna live? Are we gonna live tonight? Are we gonna live? Tell me, are we gonna live tonight? Are we gonna live? Are we gonna live tonight? And on a slightly related note, you remember you sort of look back on your friend Carter Albrecht in one of the tunes, thinking about the anniversary of his death. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, you recorded with him a lot in the studio. That's how you guys became really close. And you still work in the studio a lot. Do you ever just hear sort of the way he would think about a song, or does his voice come back to you in different ways? Well, I do. I feel like when Carter died, it was like someone reached into the heart of Dallas music pulled out the heart and then just threw it in the deepest ocean, you know. I haven't made a record in Dallas since he died. And I'm, wow. I came to terms with that recently, like I think maybe. And he's the last person that walked out of my studio, actually, my old studio, before we tore down the old control room and built the new one that's been there now for almost 8 years, which I think is strange.
Yeah.
But I think that with this song, it feels good that, like, even though it took me, it was sort of an epic struggle in a way to get this record finally out. The song is called 2 Years. I wrote it on the 2 year anniversary of his death, which is now in September will have been 8 years.
Right.
So it shows you how long it all took me. But I'm really glad that I have a song on a record in 2015 about ultimately how much I miss my friend and loved him and how brilliant he was. And getting to your question, actually, the textures on 2 Years and they're a little messed up and fun. And I think the words are fun for ultimately at the heart of the song of being about contemplating, you know, mortality and also the loss of loved ones. I still think that Carter would have dug it, hopefully, because it's a little fun.
Who's playing in your band now?
Well, I have a 1979 Panasonic cassette boombox.
Awesome.
Yeah.
It's your band leader?
Yes. Well, so I'll tell you very quickly, the boombox is not on the record. On the record, it's John Dufalo and Jason Garner and Nick Earle, Joe Reyes, Richard Martin are mainly, which are the Treefort Five, basically, with the addition of Nick Earle, who also plays in the Travoltas with Paul Slavens and I.
Yeah.
But live, last year I started doing these dates with Rhett Miller, and we've been going all over the country, and I got sort of bored with playing acoustic, and I still love doing it from time to time, but I have a very short attention span when it comes to most things. And so I just started putting some tracks on a cassette, and I found this great old Panasonic boombox, and so I've been doing... That's my band right
Very
now.
Very cool. You know. I'm going to see you in a couple years. You're going to have a looping machine, and you're going to have all this stuff going on.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I like old things. Like, you know, I've got a 1963 guitar that's banged up and old suits, and so I may not have any... I'll be, like, using 8 tracks.
You're just going backwards.
Yeah, I'm going backwards, yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you,
really
Hunter.
Really appreciate it.
Talk a dead man stand. Desperation. Dead man's walk, a dead man's talk, a dead man stand. Desolation. Dead man don't talk. Dead man don't walk.
Salim Nirala's new album comes out August 7th. Search for upcoming concerts at guidelive.com. And now, it's time for me to get a little personal. Allow me to bend your ear on the subject of Janet Jackson, who's poised for a comeback with a new album on the way and a tour hitting Dallas early next year. Before I think about the future, though, I should take you back.
Get the point? Good. Let's dance.
It's 1989. I've just started 7th grade. But I don't care much about schoolwork or the team sports that rule my small East Texas town. All I care about is saving up quarters and dollars, because there's an end cap at the local Walmart with my name all over it. Every time I make it to 12 or 13 bucks, which takes longer than you'd imagine for a 12-year-old in 1989, I beg my parents to cart me over to the Behemoth department store. I run all the way to the back, to that end cap, the one bearing the new cassettes. I peruse and peruse, looking at track lists, cover art, trying to decide how I'll blow my savings this time. One particular trip to this end cap is far more memorable than the rest in my now 38-year-old mind. It's the one when my eyes meet the stark black and white cover of Janet Jackson's Rhythm Nation 1814. I look at the back of the tape, and there are so many tracks, intros, outros, strange titles like The Knowledge and Black Cat. I take the leap, buy the thing, and proceed to become more obsessed with an artist and album than I ever have and probably ever will. For the kid who spent hours in his room messing with tape recorders, the way Rhythm Nation 1814 unfolds is a revelation. There's no moment of silence. Songs bleed into each other with spoken clips and skits setting moods. The beats and arrangements, which I'll later learn come courtesy of the great Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, are so layered and complex that I hear something different every time I listen. And I listen a lot, several times a day. I make my own remixes with a double cassette boombox. I go deep with this record. But the real draw during this entire period of my life is Janet Jackson herself. She's from an ultra-famous music family, but this album amazingly puts her in her own sonic dimension. She sounds so confident, so cool, that her mere presence on the record assures me that one day I'll figure out a way to fit in somewhere. Of course, along with the social consciousness jams and the dance anthems on Rhythm Nation are the slow, sexy bedroom tunes. I'm so young in 1989 that they kind of bore me, compared to Jackson's other songs. All those extended instrumentals, all that moaning. But I'll soon come to understand that kind of song better. Cut to 1993, when the single That's the Way Love Goes hits radio. Slinking around in the video for the song and singing with her greatest confidence yet, Jackson sells the idea of grown and sexy, even to those of us who've only just gotten past puberty. From that point, she wholeheartedly embraced the concept of sex selling, and we didn't hear a whole lot more idealism or seriousness in her music after that point, which was fine, considering she remained one of the world's most beloved artists. Well, until that whole Super Bowl incident in 2004. You know the one. It involved Justin Timberlake and a nipple seen round the world. Everyone railed against her after that slip, to the point at which she had to issue a video apology. The albums that followed her live TV mishap somehow didn't pack as much power or innovation as the ones before. Signs that even the brightest pop star could fall. Needless to say, that bummed me out. So I put my love for Miss Jackson somewhere on a shelf and moved on to more modern concerns. Cut to 2015. When Spotify has replaced my Walmart end cap, and it feels a lot less like a sacrifice to discover new music. I'm tooling around on the web and I see the headline, Janet Jackson announces new album, releases first single. For the first time in years, seeing the name of a new Janet tune gives me the goosebumps. It's called No Sleep, with three E's because why not? And it's produced by Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. It's a smooth, infectious tune about planning and plotting for a lustful, romantic reunion. It's just the kind of jam that Janet's been perfecting throughout her career. I can't stop listening to it. Completely unexpectedly, I feel like I'm 12 again. Only this time, I know where I fit. It's a good feeling.
Come on, you missing me. I complete. We ain't gonna have no sleep.
Janis Jackson will bring her Unbreakable World Tour to Dallas's American Airlines Center on January 24th, 2016. Find out more at Ticketmaster. Before I leave you, a little bit more on the Dallas artist who made that haunting music that opened the show. Sudi not only performs under a singular name, but she's a singular artist in that there's no other music quite like hers being made here. Listen to her debut self-titled EP released back in April, and you'll hear operatic stacked vocals mingling with eerie electronic textures. I find a lot of her stuff to be very calming, even though she says it's written from a place of anxiety. She told Guide Live in a recent profile that her record is all about discovering herself as a person and as an artist, and quote, realizing the two are pretty much the same thing. So I'll leave you with one of my favorite songs from Sudi's EP, Heart Attack. Listening is produced by myself with engineering assistance from Brian Ellich. Find out more on local and national music at guidelive.com. And until next time, thanks for listening.
Brain on the way to